Today on Maine Calling, the Declaration of Independence and what it means today. All this year, Maine and the nation are marking the semi-quincentennial. It's America's 250th birthday, and the Declaration of Independence is essentially the birth certificate of the United States. I'm Cindy Hahn. We learn the opening words as children. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. What did this foundational document say about who America wanted to be in 1776, and how relevant are those words today? We'll learn what led up to the moment in history when our founders chose to make independence the defining goal for our nation's place in the world and for its individual citizens. We will also find out about a statewide tour where people in every Maine county will get a chance to see a rare copy of the Declaration of Independence. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Highland Green, an active 55-plus lifestyle community with a 230-acre nature preserve, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The Declaration of Independence put words on parchment paper that would live on as America's foundational ideals of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Today, we'll find out more about the document that gave birth to our nation 250 years ago and what was happening in Maine around that time, and what's in store for Maine's semi-quincentennial celebration. My guests from the Maine Historical Society are Executive Director Steve Bromage and Deputy Director Jamie Rice. And also with us is Liam Reardon. He's Professor of History at the University of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to know about the history of the Declaration of Independence? Are you interested in partaking in the 250th birthday events in Maine? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post a comment on social media, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And just a reminder that our Maine Calling phone number is different than the one for the Maine Public membership drive. So again, the Maine Calling phone number is 800-399-3566. And Steve, I'm going to turn to you. We'll talk in a moment about the Declaration of Independence and the history around it. But first, we want to hear about the exciting plans the Maine Historical Society has to mark America's 250th birthday. I know there's a lot in the works, so tell us a little bit about this big year-long series.
Yeah, well, Cindy, thank you so much for having us and giving us the opportunity to talk about this. It really is a big and exciting year. You know, the 250th birthday is a pretty big achievement. I think it comes at a really important time. You know, these are kind of challenging times politically and culturally in this country. There's division. So I think we really see an opportunity to really try to help reset the civic dialogue and to really reflect on the ideals we set out for ourselves at the founding that we still carry today, to look at how we can need to improve. You know, so the Declaration didn't emerge as a fully formed document, but that's our responsibilities every day. So what we really hope to do is a couple of things, is really find ways and help Mainers throughout the state participate in the 250th and feel part of it, to really celebrate Maine's role and identify Maine's role in the founding and the revolution. Jamie can talk about that in a couple of minutes. And to, again, really get people talking and thinking about what does it mean to be American? What do those words in the Declaration mean to us? And what are our responsibilities as citizens? So with that, we've got a lot going on. We've got our wonderful exhibition that will open in March. I think the most distinctive, exciting thing is a statewide tour of our copy of the Declaration of Independence. We have a very rare copy of the Dunlap broadside, which was printed on July 4th, 1776, and used to spread the word of independence. So we've had that in our collections for some time, but we're going to take that out, and it's going to visit each of Maine's 16 counties this summer, really to provide an opportunity for people around Maine to see that sacred document, reflect on its word, and to really highlight what each of the different parts of Maine contribute to our kind of identity and well-being. So that's a quick snapshot.
Sure, and I'll follow up with Jamie about that tour because it really sounds exciting, and the fact that it's going all through the state is really something as far as engagement. So Jamie, Steve just called it the Dunlap Broadside Declaration of Independence. What does that refer to, the Dunlap part of it? And also, how did you get it?
The Dunlap Broadside were printed by a printer named John Dunlap in Philadelphia on July 4th, 1776. And Maine Historical Society has one of 26 surviving copies. They thought maybe, and Liam might know better than me, but maybe around 200 or so were printed the night of, and 26 survive in the United States and in England. And Maine Historical Society's had its copy. It was bequeathed to MHS in 1896 by Dr. John S.H. Fogg, who was originally from Elliott, Maine, and a Bowdoin grad. And he collected about 5,000 autographs of note of American and European history and was very focused on the Revolution. So lots of representation of revolutionary celebrities, generals, presidents, et cetera. And the Declaration was sort of the crowning piece. So we took possession of it in 1906, when we first built the library here on Congress Street, where we are today. And we've had it in the collection since then. And we knew it was a Declaration of Independence, and it was a rare, we didn't know it was a Dunlap Broadside until the 1990s, when we took it to Massachusetts and compared it with Harvard's copy. So since then, we're on the list of surviving copies. And this is a great opportunity to be able to share a really rare document that relates to American history.
Does that mean it's been tucked away safely and protected all this time, or did until you knew?
Of course, it always in an undisclosed location, but it will be on display in the Pathways to Freedom, Maine Stories of the American Revolution exhibit, which is MHS's signature exhibit here in Portland. It'll be on display there from March through July 4th. And then it'll take a little bit of a break, and then it will go on tour. So there'll be a chance for people to see it both in the exhibition in the context of how the Declaration came to be, and then on the statewide tour.
So in terms of engagement with the document when you're going around the state, I mean, people won't be able to pick it up and hold it, obviously, but what does that engagement look like? What are you looking to do to get people sort of to experience this?
So we have it located at a variety of different host sites, and there'll be different components. So Steve, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the experiences, the audience experience when we're on the tour.
Sure. So kind of in identifying host sites, a big part of, you know, we work with partners throughout the state through our Maine Memory Network. There's 300 cultural organizations we work with. So on one hand, it's an opportunity to highlight them and all the partners who are doing work around the state to preserve and share their communities' stories. So when we were looking to identify partners, host sites, you know, there were a couple criteria. They needed to have a secure facility, obviously. They need to have a wonderful place where the public can encounter it. So as we visited and looked at each place, each will have a space where the Declaration can be displayed prominently. We'll have other interpretive material that goes with it, a couple pull-up interpretive banners. We've created some great digital content that people will see there. So there'll be an experience of lining up and queuing, and people will get to see that material. But then they'll have a moment where, you know, we're finding a place where the Declaration can really stand and be kind of revered and seen in that way. So that's the idea. We're going to have, it'll be on public display for 2 or 3 days. We're going to have a day for schools in most communities during the school year. And then it'll be on public display for Fridays and Saturdays. Most communities will also have a local commemorative event of some sort. You know, some communities have lots planned for the 250th, some not so much. So we're really looking to kind of complement what's happening there, give communities an opportunity to participate, and really help it be a strategic opportunity for everybody who's participating to kind of bring their community together and kind of, again, talk about those principles. What does it mean to be an American?
Sure. So we'll circle back to those principles in a moment. But just so in case people are listening and saying, wait, where is it going to be in my town? Where can they find that information?
Yeah, on MHS's website, we have a whole web section dedicated to Revolutionary Maine, this initiative, and that has a tour of all the tour dates and sites on it. So if you go to Maine Historical Society's website, you'll find a button to click on there on the homepage.
Oh, that's so neat. So Liam, I think a lot of us do have some knowledge of the Declaration of Independence, but it might be a little fuzzy from learning about it in school. So you get to give us a quick lesson in how did this document come about and why it's so significant?
So I want to start by just underlining how amazing the Dunlap broadside is. So this is the first public copy printed of the Declaration of Independence. So the Continental Congress in Philadelphia does some committee of the whole editing of the language in the Declaration of Independence. They make a lot of technical changes. They make one significant substantive change that is agreed to on July 4th. And then when they've got the text decided upon, they rush it to a Philadelphia printer, Robert Dunlap. He prints it through the night. And as Jamie said before, we don't really know how many copies he printed overnight, but we do know only 26 are known to survive today. And one of them is at the Maine Historical Society. So I think this is really great that it's going to be on display at the exhibit at the MHS in Portland, and then that it'll be traveling to every county. So I encourage people to take a look at it.
Yeah, so that was what happened on July 4th. The actual signing was a little later, but this document was printed on July 4th.
That is correct. Or possibly early in the morning on July 5th,
Yeah.
right?
Okay. Depends on how late they burn the midnight oil, right? Can I cut in
But it
with a
is, but it does really, it puts at the very top line that date, July 4th, 1776. And
Yeah.
that has really powerful commemorative significance for Americans to the present day. Most of us try to get together with family. Most of us have some kind of barbecue. Those of us with who are pyromaniacs like to light off fireworks. I mean, this is all because we are connected to the Declaration of Independence through commemorative activities and popular culture.
So I asked you a big, broad question about the Declaration, but I can't resist asking a question about what you mentioned about it being written at, the draft and editing happening. So the story I heard was that we know Thomas Jefferson wrote it, but he wrote a draft and it got edited, right? By was it Benjamin Franklin and John Adams? Can you talk about that?
So there is a committee of five who are assigned the task to draft the Declaration of Independence. And Jefferson is undeniably the lead author of that. He does most of the work in the committee. The committee has a couple of suggestions and makes some changes, but it is appropriate to really think of Jefferson as the main author. And then that goes to the Continental Congress, and they have some votes about independence, which are really important and worth talking about. And then they edit Jefferson's language.
Okay, sorry, Steve, you were going to say something there.
Well, I was just going to chime in as Liam was talking about what the Dunlap, we like to equate it to the tweet of the day. It was about how you got information out instantaneously. And it really was sent in that spirit.
Well, speaking of that, they didn't exactly disseminate it like we do over the internet, right? So how did the printout of the actual document reach where it needed to go to other countries even?
So this is a great point. So a broadside is a single piece of paper that could be printed rapidly and distributed widely and was relatively inexpensive to produce. So the Dunlap broadside that we're talking about measures about 3 feet by 2 feet large, and it prints the entire text of the Declaration on one side of the sheet of paper. And it was sent to state legislatures. It was sent to George Washington to read before the troops who had assembled in New York City awaiting a British invasion. So it is hard for us, I think, to think about this as rapid and mass communication, but for the late 18th century, this was the quickest way to get the word out. And that idea that it was printed overnight, undoubtedly into the early morning of July 5th, and then disseminated from there, is, I think, part of the excitement of this document.
Well, we have so much of the history to get to and the significance, but we do need to take a quick break. We are talking about the Declaration of Independence, and this is Maine Calling. We'll be back in a few minutes.
And it's good to have you with us today for Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio. My name is Ari Snyder. I'm a reporter and host on the news team, joined by my colleague Lindsay, Director of Leadership Gifts here at Maine Public. We are asking for your support today. It is New Friend Friday during our current fundraising drive. That means that all new donations will be matched. So if you're on the fence, maybe you're new to Maine, maybe you're new to Maine Public, now is the time to donate because your dollars will go twice as far. Call 1-800-866-1475 to speak to one of our friendly volunteers standing ready to take your call, or go online at mainepublic.org.
That's right. We have a room full of great volunteers. I've had the privilege of chatting with some of them myself over the last hour, and they are not only eager to speak to you, they are donors themselves, and they are hoping that you'll give them a call today at 1-800-866-1475 and make your donation and join them to support this great community service. You know, Maine Public is something that I have the privilege of talking with so many of you about. And I actually just got off the phone with a donor in the Midcoast who was sharing the impact that it has on their lives every day and how much they appreciate this service. And that's why they continue their support. And they hope you will too. Call 1-800-866-1475 or go to mainepublic.org.
Yeah, you know, Lindsay, I always enjoy pitching out of Maine Calling because it's such an easy show to pitch out of. It is such a clear example of what public media offers to you, the listener. You get these broad, wide-ranging conversations about fascinating topics. Today, the Declaration of Independence, you know, earlier this week, it was breaking news. It was sort of understanding, you know, what happened with the ICE enforcement surge in Maine. So it's just the coverage, the breadth and depth of coverage you get through Maine Calling is so emblematic of what public media stands for and what it delivers to you every day. All of that, of course, made possible through your support. Call 1-800-866-1475 or go online and make a donation today at mainepublic.org. Again, all new donations are being matched. So if you haven't donated before, now is a perfect time to do so.
And if you are new to supporting Maine Public, I want to remind all of you that becoming an Evergreen Friend is a great way to support this station. It does provide that monthly, ongoing, predictable support that helps us plan our budgets for the future, make sure that we can bring this great program, like Ari was saying, about the program we're listening today and how it connects each of our communities. And you can do that by becoming an Evergreen supporter. Just give us a call and you can talk to one of these great volunteers. They will help you set that up. At whatever donation level is right for you. Many new donors start at the $10 or $20 a month level, but the real important part is making that phone call and becoming part of this community. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call, or if you prefer, you can go online to mainepublic.org.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to some folks who've already stepped up and made a donation. Floyd in Lewiston, Julie in Holden, Mary in Hamden, who says, they're increasing a current sustaining membership, and Mary in Rockport also increasing a current sustaining membership. So thank you to those four who've already stepped up and made a donation. And also, as you heard, some people are able to dig a little deeper and increase that current sustaining membership, which, of course, we welcome. Now is the time to join them. Call 1-800-866-1475 or go online to mainepublic.org. Again, that is 1-800-866-1475. 1475 or mainepublic.org. And thank you so very much to those who've donated.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. What gave rise to the Declaration of Independence and what's unique about it? We learn about the founding of the United States of America and about some key moments in Maine's revolutionary history. Joining me today is UMaine History Professor Liam Reardon and with the Maine Historical Society, Jamie Rice, who is Deputy Director, as well as Steve Bromage, Executive Director. And we welcome your comments and questions. What do life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness mean to you? Do you think the words in the Declaration of Independence are relevant to what's happening in our country today? Email talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Liam, I'm going to return to you because I still want to set up a little bit of context about this document, the Declaration of Independence. Can you explain why there was this need to write this declaration?
So it was a very key moment in the American Revolution to formally announce that colonies wanted to separate themselves from the British Empire and end that colonial relationship with Great Britain. And one of the things that's hard for us to understand today is that this was an exceedingly difficult decision, right? To us in the 21st century, it's obvious, it's gonna happen, it seems natural, but this was an extremely hard decision for colonists generally, and even for the Patriot leaders who were in the Continental Congress. And this is one of the really important differences between the Dunlap broadside, the first printed public copy of the Declaration of Independence, and the version that most of us know that has all of those signatures on the bottom. And that version isn't created until really August and into the fall of 1776. It takes a long time to get those signers at the bottom. And when they print the Dunlap copy on the night of July 4th, the most significant thing in the title that is different from the version most of us know in our mind's eye is that the Dunlap broadside does not announce the Declaration of Independence as unanimous. Because the critical vote in the Continental Congress, the decision to declare independence, is only supported by 12 of the 13 colonies that are present there. And that is a pretty amazing thing to realize, that this shining moment of political statement was something that even the Continental Congress did not agree on until after the Dunlap broadside was printed.
Who was the holdout, the 13th?
So New York did not. Okay. Agree until another week later.
Huh. Steve, go ahead, add to that.
Yeah, well, and I think that that gets it to some, one of the really important, powerful things about the Declaration. You know, life is messy. Life was messy then, it is messy now. And on one hand, the Declaration is it has these soaring ideals that were really radical at their time. Those words are so powerful. At the same time, at that time, the founders also denied basic rights to women, people of color, indigenous people who are called out in a really horrific passage, a grievance 27. So I think holding those things together and understanding the idealism and that for 250 years we've been striving to achieve those ideals. And to me, that's the power today. You read those words and that's one of the things we hope will happen with our tour and the programming this year, to get every one of us to look at, read those words, to get out of the media cultural sound bubble and go back into ourselves and think, what does that mean to me? What are our responsibilities as citizens? And how do we really create a more productive civic dialogue? So I think that's the great opportunity for Maine this year to, you know, we have a long tradition here of engaging in respectful dialogue. And I think this is an opportunity for Maine once again to kind of lead that effort to really talk like grownups and to think about what's important to us.
Well, that Jamie, I'm going to turn to you about that. Part of the plans, like Steve said, are to go to the communities and actually ask people, you know, those famous words in the document, all men are created equal, our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So are you actually going to go into communities and say those words, what do they mean to you, and have dialogue with people just talking to each other? Is that part of the goal?
Yes, we're working on, at least at this stage, working on digital content. Abigail Jacob is our digital media specialist here and has been conducting interviews with a variety of different people from lots of different geographic and diverse ages, et cetera, to try to get some of those stories from people who are alive today and kind of talk about what does it mean to be a citizen? What do those words mean to them? What do we imagine for the future of our country or for Maine? And kind of bringing that together in a video that we'll be able to take it'll both appear in the Pathways to Freedom exhibition here at MHS, but also go on the road with the declaration and get people to start that conversation. And, you know, and then continuing to document those stories over the year and then feature them on the Maine Memory Network so that we can have kind of that conversation as the signers were having in that moment, the Patriot were having in that moment.
Yeah. And Steve, you know, something you mentioned was, you know, actually reading the words. So, of course, in prepping for today's show, you know, I hadn't sat and actually read the whole thing through. And what you pay attention to that fascinating, you know, the soaring words of the introduction. But then there's this whole long list of grievances against King George that, like, I forgot that was all in there. But that's actually the bulk of the document. So talk about those, you know, what was sort of in that list, not that you have to go item by item, but what people were kind of riled up about and how they felt this document was going to address that.
Yeah. Liam, do you want to actually take a swing at that? I think you might have a good perspective on that.
Yeah. So Cindy, you're exactly right. The, you know, at least 60% of this document, the Declaration of Independence, is a list of abuses. And there are 18 he has statements. And the Dunlap broadside, you see these particularly clearly, the way the typography is laid out. They're kind of hidden in the fancy parchment version that all the signers go to later. So, you know, it's relentless. He has. And among those 18 he has statements, there are actually 27 grievances about abuses, really, of the king, the things the king have done that justify these colonies and saying we are dissolving our bonds with the British Empire. So one of these kind of relates to Maine in an interesting way. I think the 15th he has statement is, he has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. And this is usually understood to refer to the destruction of Norfolk, Virginia, and the burning of Falmouth, Maine, now Portland, in the fall of 1775. And one of the things that is a little shocking, perhaps, is that the destruction of those two cities was not exclusively done by the British. So Norfolk, Virginia, in particular, it's quite clear, is destroyed by Patriot forces because Norfolk was a holdout of loyalists in Virginia. And the destruction in Falmouth, while it is initiated by a British naval bombing, and then Marines come ashore and fire a number, you know, add fire to destroy more property there, it's also the case that militia from outside of Portland come into the town and plunder the ruins. And the town of Gorham, the Massachusetts legislature, the Falmouth selectmen, they all pass laws condemning this pillaging of property that was also done by militiamen who were in favor of the Patriot cause. So a lot of messiness in this one particular example of abuse, if we really look at what is it referring to and what happened on the ground.
Steve.
Cindy, I think one of the things that's going to be really interesting about the tour is that you'll get different dimensions of the story at different places and different host sites. So one of the examples is we're really excited that the Abbey Museum will host the Declaration. So some of the context for the founding of the United States and the Declaration is 13,000 years of Wabanaki experience in Maine. And what did this mean for them? And how does that story told? So at the Abbey, our guests will get to see the Declaration, but they'll also be able to really be introduced and learn and really explore the Wabanaki experience through the interpretation there and public programming we'll do. At the same time, another place is the Margaret Chase Smith Library in Skowhegan. You know, and that's another powerful example where you have Margaret Chase Smith, who was so driven by principles and these main values, and it's all about conscience for her. So I think, you know, there are many dimensions to how we understand and we internalize and act on the Declaration. So I think for people to experience in different ways, and again, I think so much of this, so how does this apply to us today? And how do we kind of get people really actively thinking about how do we live those principles and values?
Sure. And in terms of, Jamie, I'll turn to you for this, in terms of, you know, this idea of Maine's role in the American Revolution, that's part I wanted to let you talk a little bit more about the Pathways exhibit, right, and highlighting people who were involved in the revolution from Maine.
Yes, yeah, so the Pathways exhibit features six people living in what was the District of Maine at that time, and it follows their stories, and we contextualize, well, both we contextualize their stories and what we call Maine milestones during the revolution. So we bring six pathfinders, Molly Agat, an Abenaki healer and artist, William Bailey, a citizen soldier from Stroudwater, Portland, and Prince Dunsick, an enslaved man who moves to Maine after the war, when he earned his freedom through service. And then Francis Waldo, who's a loyalist, also from Portland. Peleg Wadsworth, who's the namesake of the Wadsworth Longfellow House here, who was an officer. And Hannah Weston, a 17-year-old girl who was pregnant at the time, carried pewter through the woods to aid in the Battle of the Margaretta. So bringing those stories kind of to the forefront so we can kind of talk about people's experiences, different experiences during the Revolutionary War. And we put those into the context of what the core milestones. So Liam spoke to the burning of Falmouth, which is probably the most well-known, the Benedict Arnold's march through Quebec, which Maine Historical has the letter book Benedict Arnold kept during that invasion, as well as Battle of the Margaretta, which I mentioned, which is one of the earliest naval battles in the American Revolution, and then the famed and failed Penobscot expedition that happens towards the middle-ish of the war in 1779. So kind of looking at those people's lives, looking at those four core examples, and then at the end really examining how memory really informs what we know about the revolution, and kind of taking some of the legends and the myths that have kind of come around those figures and have come around the war, and looking at them in a broader context.
So that's at a different timing than the tour around the state that the exhibit's going
right,
on.
Right, the Pathways to Freedom exhibit is open March 13th through December 31st, and that's a physical exhibition at Maine Historical Society. And so all of those components are part of that. And as I mentioned earlier, the Declaration is a core moment of that, but the original Dunlap that will be on display there from March through July.
Okay, and Steve, what did you want to add?
Yeah, since we're having this conversation in a Maine public context, one of the things, like Ken Burns in his recent documentary, you know, this whole question, how do you visualize and represent what people who participated in that era look like. Jamie, do you just want to talk about the anime characters for the Pathfinders and then maybe the representations like Conrad Hare?
So we engaged with Shannon Sokolexis is an artist that we worked with to create illustrations of the six Pathfinders, because we don't actually have images. We don't know what they looked like. So Shannon and our former MHS curator Tilly Lasky did extensive research and then created likenesses for these, and they're done in an anime kind of a style. So it kind of brings a little bit of modern twist on the six Pathfinders. So those are a really fun kind of addition. And we'll also be working with the Children's Museums and a couple of other organizations to kind of bring that to a variety of different age groups.
I saw those illustrations. They really bring the people to life. So that's really a great idea. We are going to take another quick break right now. This is Maine Calling. We are learning all about the Declaration of Independence and its tour throughout the state. We'll be back in a few minutes.
And you're listening to Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio. Hello, my name is Ari Snyder. I'm a reporter and host here on the Maine Public News team. Joined by my colleague, Lindsay, Director of Leadership Gifts at Maine Public, we are asking for your support on this Friday here during our membership drive. Please call 1-800-866-1475 to make a donation today or go online at mainepublic.org. And I understand, Lindsay, today is a really good day to donate if you're a first-time donor.
That's right. It is New Friend Friday, always my favorite day of a drive. Not only do I love Fridays for many reasons, but New Friend Friday, we are encouraging all first-time donors to give us a call at that number, 1-800-866-1475, and make that donation. All those new donors, donations are being matched today, which is extremely exciting. That means your donation will be doubled. And if you do become an evergreen friend, as a new friend, those donations throughout the year will actually be doubled as well. So it's an extra incentive to pick up the phone and join us today. Again, that number, 1-800-866-1475, or go to mainepublic.org.
1-800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org. Two easy, straightforward ways to for you to make your support, make your donation to Maine Public Radio. And you know, there are many reasons to donate, of course, supporting the news and entertainment that you rely on, and wouldn't be a pledge drive if we didn't throw in a couple extra perks. When you donate at the $500 level annually, that works out to $42 a month, you can get a signed and numbered Eric Hopkins print. This is from Maine artist Eric Hopkins. He's created a new original painting exclusively for Maine Public. It's called Evergreen Vista, and Eric is personally signing and numbering 365 prints for Maine Public supporters who donate at the qualifying level of $500 a year. Prints will be 20 inches by 16 inches. They are high quality G clay art prints. Claim yours with a donation now at 1-800-866-1475 or by donating online at mainepublic.org.
It's really a fantastic piece. You can actually see it online. So if you want to see the picture first, go to our website while you make your donation, mainepublic.org. Eric was actually texting me some pictures of him signing them last night. So it's really exciting opportunity. Once they're gone, they're gone. So this is the time to call 1-800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org. I get to speak with a lot of our donors, and we heard from a donor last night looking for an update on where we are along the lines of filling the funding gap. As you know, as a dedicated listener of Maine Public, we unfortunately lost our federal funding, which represents 12% of our annual operating budget, or $2.5 million this fiscal year. And thanks to those of you who've already made your donation this year, we are making good progress, but we are not there yet. So we're about halfway through our fiscal year, and we are a little bit ahead of halfway to our goal, but we of course are having to raise money to fill that gap while also doing our normal fundraising for our operations support. So again, another reason to pick up the phone and join us today, 1-800-866-1475. Go to mainepublic.org. Help us meet those revenue goals for the year to make sure this service stays strong. 1-800-866-1475.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. What was the context that produced the Declaration of Independence, and what does it say about what it means to be an American? Joining me are Steve Bromage and Jamie Rice. They're both with the Maine Historical Society, and Liam Reardon is with the University of Maine. Join our conversation. You can call 1-800-399-3566. You can also send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Or you can post to our social media, Facebook or Instagram. And again, that number for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. Liam, I want to come back to you again. We were talking earlier about that whole list of grievances against the king that was in the Declaration. And there's a significant part of that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah. So I wanted to start by saying the thing that really excites me about history is how it can help inform us in the present. And we are really talking about the Declaration of Independence today because 2026 is 250 years later. So we have this kind of numerical connection to this very famous political document. And I think the real question is, what about that should we remember in 2026? And I think there really are two important parts to this. The opening language, which is so magnificent and full of revolutionary idealism, and really states in one long sentence the fundamental hopes of the United States as a republic, that all people are created equal, that we have natural rights that cannot be taken away from us, that governments should be limited in their power, that governments only exist to protect those rights, life, liberty, and the pursuits of happiness, and that government gets its power and legitimacy from the consent of the governed, that the people are sovereign. The people are the source of a government's legitimate authority. So that is a major part of what we should remember. But at the same time, there are these messy, difficult, painful accusations. And they remind us of the violence of this moment, the pain of this moment, the difficulty that even members of the Continental Congress had in saying, yes, we are prepared to support this Declaration of Independence. And it's the final of these grievances that Steve made a passing mention to before that really is the most shocking and painful to think about in 2026. And it is a short statement. The first part is kind of hard to understand. It accuses the king of citing domestic insurrections. And we don't really obviously know what that means if we just read the language today. But in 1776, it clearly referred to the royal governor of Virginia having offered freedom to the indentured servants and enslaved people of what he would have called rebels. And that about 250 enslaved people join Governor Dunmore and fight with him in an organization called the Ethiopian Regiment. And the last place that they had on the mainland of Virginia was the town of Norfolk. That is why it gets destroyed by patriots, because it was that loyalist bastion. The final phrase of this final he has statement is even more disturbing because translating the language doesn't require much work. And this is a very explicit condemnation of quote unquote Indian savages who are accused of a quote undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. So in this final phrase, there is an exclusion of people of African descent and of indigenous people from the political community that the Declaration of Independence is striving to create. So the big challenge for us is, can we keep a space in our public memory of the revolution generally, but the Declaration of Independence in particular, that has room for both of these dimensions? That it was both idealistic and aspirational and really things that I think we should love today, but it also has a dimension that is cruel and brutal and was also central to what that document was in 1776. And what I think is instructive is we see both of those things still in American society in 2026. That this is a way our distant past can help us think more clearly about who are we today and who would we like to be tomorrow.
Sure. And I know that part of the conversations that you're going to have as you take the declaration on tour, Jamie, is about shared values. And that's something that you want it to be about. Steve, you mentioned that too. So does the Declaration of Independence imply certain shared values in America that you feel like even today with the messiness that we have today that Liam just referred to, that those hold true all the way from then to now?
Well, I think it's important to note that the Declaration of Independence is just that, declaring independence, and that the framework for the government and those shared values you see in the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights. So kind of, I think, you know, it can be easy to kind of bring that all together as sort of one thing, but they are fundamentally different, I guess, at their purpose. So I think you have to look across all of those documents to kind of see what those values are. And Steve?
Yeah, I think the power is what it really does is it puts the responsibility on us. You know, generation after generation of American citizens, it's up to us to interpret, and as Liam says, you know, pull together the complexity and the incongruities. But I think that's what stewardship, that's what our role as American citizens is determining that and negotiating that and figuring out what that means. You know, you know, I personally, you know, hold on to that opening section, which I think is our North Star, and we hold it up as a mirror to ourselves. And how are we doing? What can we do better? You know, so I think to me, the power is to get it right back into the hands of the people and making sure that we're living up to its highest principles and addressing our failures when we don't.
All right, we have an email from Melanie who says, I'm listening now and I wanted to recommend children's book author Anna Crowley Redding's wonderful picture book, Rescuing the Declaration of Independence, How We Almost Lost the Words That Built America. I guess it's a book from 2020. It's a great way to introduce young kids to the importance of our Declaration of Independence. So thank you for that suggestion, Melanie. And I'm going to squeeze in a question from Larry from Milton, New Hampshire, who wanted to get your thoughts on the lack of capitalization of the P in pursuit of happiness and the capitalization of H in happiness. So I think the idea of his question is, was that an intentional emphasis or is that just the way they wrote back then? Any of you want to take that, Liam?
So there's been a lot of scrutiny of the typography, the punctuation, the capitalization. You know, what can we learn from these things? And it, you know, one of the arguments that is made is there are a lot of dashes in the Dunlap version. And this really reflects the idea that the Declaration was meant to be spoken, and that these dashes represent a sort of sign to a speaker about where to take their pause, where to take their breath, how to make their emphasis. I happen to have a copy of the Dunlap broadside in front of me, and in the Dunlap broadside, pursuit is capitalized and happiness is also capitalized. So in the rushed version done overnight, that was the way the printer laid it out. In the more formal parchment version that they hired a guy with elegant penmanship to draw out, in that case, he did not capitalize the happiness. And I don't know that any scholar has really dug deep into that, if there is significance to it, or if it's just about the particular style of that penman and what he thought looked better in terms of the script.
Okay, then I'll ask you more of a broad question. Just with the last minute or so, Liam, just Jamie had mentioned, you know, the Declaration of Independence is about independence. That's the central thing. So just talk about the significance of that as sort of unique in its time, that that's what it was trying to do, is declare independence.
Well, it was a very significant moment in modern history when we see a very clear anti-colonial struggle. And these colonies are saying, we don't think it's appropriate to be ruled by a distant center of government authority. And so that anti-colonial tradition is in many respects the start of modern history, with independence movements in Asia and Africa that go right into the 20th century.
Well, that's a lot to get into that I wish we could keep going, but we do need to wrap up. So thank you all for joining us today. Steve Bromage is Executive Director of the Maine Historical Society, and Jamie Rice is Deputy Director, and Liam Reardon is Professor of History at the University of Maine. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue, and we had help from Sam Tracy. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandreau. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
And it's good to have you with us here at Maine Public Radio on this Friday. We are in the middle of our membership drive, asking for your support to keep the vital and entertaining programming that you rely on every day thriving into the future. Call 1-800-866-1475 or go online at mainpublic.org to make your donation today. It is New Friend Friday, meaning all new donations are being matched. So if you're new to Maine Public, maybe you're new to Maine, or maybe you're a longtime listener ready to step up and support this service, today is the perfect day to do so, because when you give for the first time, your dollars will be matched, so your impact will be doubled. That's a great deal. Call 1-800-866-1475 or go online to mainpublic.org. And I'm joined here in the studio by my colleague, Lindsay, Director of Leadership Gifts. Lindsay, good to be here with you.
Great to be here with you, Ari. Thanks so much. You know, listener dollars are behind everything you hear on Maine Public Radio, and the dollars raised today will power the news that you rely on in months ahead. Speaking of community, we're always so grateful to the United Way of Maine and John T. Gorman Foundation for their generous support of the In Plain Sight Reporting Project. In Plain Sight is a two-year reporting series that aims to better understand the challenges that so many Mainers face and inform our community about the widespread underreported issues around the struggles to get by. Every day, 40% of Maine households make tough choices, such as deciding between quality childcare and paying the rent. This population is known as ALICE, Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. This is just one of the many examples of the types of stories and reporting that are unique to Maine Public that your support makes possible. And to make this and make sure that these stories can continue in the future, please join us today. That number to make your donation is 1-800-866-1475. Again, it's New Friend Friday, so no time is better than now. Your donation will be matched. And Ari, I believe there's a few extra opportunities to, you know, take advantage of today here on New Friend Friday. Again, that number, 1-800-866-1475 or mainpublic.org.
Absolutely. And this is the Hidden Brain Ticket giveaway. This is a new member offer. When you donate to Maine Public for the first time today, you will automatically be entered to win one of six pairs of tickets to the already sold out performance of Hidden Brain in Portland. That's host Shankar Vedantam and the Hidden Brain team coming to the State Theater in Portland Friday, April 3rd. Maine Public is going to randomly select six people who become new members during this pledge drive to win a pair of tickets to the show. As mentioned, that show's already sold out, so this is your shot to get one of those tickets if you don't have one already. To become a first-time contributor today, call 1-800-866-1475 or give online at mainpublic.org. So not only is your first-time donation being matched, going twice as far, but you will automatically be entered to win one of six pairs of tickets to the sold-out Hidden Brain show in Portland. That's a great deal all around. Call 1-800-866-1475 or go online and make a donation at mainpublic.org.
1-800-866-1475 is the number to call or go to mainpublic.org. As Ari said there, it's a great day to take advantage of some of these special offers. And one that's always in place if you become a member is access to Maine Public PBS Passport. I've heard from Irwin this morning that it's going to be a chilly weekend yet again. And when I think about hunkering down for the weekend, Maine Public Passport is something that I like to utilize. You can stream your favorite programming and shows, and it's just a great benefit to catch up on some of those episodes, maybe of the American Revolution that you didn't get to stay up for live. You can catch all of that on Maine Public Passport when you become a member today. So please join us, support this station by calling 1-800-866-1475 or go to mainpublic.org.
Absolutely. 1-800-866-1475 or mainpublic.org. I want to give a shout out to some folks who've already donated. That includes Milda in Arundel and Philip in Portland, who's increasing a current sustaining membership. Thank you both to Philip and Milda and to everyone who's already stepped up to make a donation during this pledge drive. Of course, many people are digging a little deeper if they can. We know not everyone's able to, but if you are able to dig a little deeper and increase your current sustaining membership, that just really helps us budget, plan into the future, have that solid financial base that we need when we're that we need to sort of look at when we're making decisions about programming, staffing, and everything into the future.